This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Let me bring in Alex Marvez. He is with us now. Alex, how excited is the NFL in reality about this Supreme Court ruling?
They're excited if they're able to make some money off it, and you have what's called an integrity fee. Have you dived into that this morning, Clay?
Yeah, I think it's ludicrous. I think the idea that the people who are taking sports bets should have to give money to the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball in any way. Look, the way the leagues are going to make money off of this is more people are going to watch their games. They are going to be able to sell direct advertising. This is my opinion. They're going to be able to sell direct advertising just like the English Premier League teams do and everything else. The idea of an integrity fee is ludicrous to me. Your game has integrity already, or else it should be a felony and everybody should be prosecuted for fraud. So I think the leagues need to understand how they're actually going to make money. They're not going to get a share of every bet that's wagered. And if they're arguing that, then there's going to be a ton of offshores that roll in and have a competitive advantage not to have to offer that.
Well, I mean, that's the big question about the offshores as well. And, you know, that's, look, the NFL, okay, we understand that fantasy football is an avenue to gaming, right? I mean, you know, we understand that, and it's really just another form of gambling, so this isn't anything new for the NFL from that standpoint. I'm just saying on their end, they've got to go ahead and make a big stink out of this and the fight about it and making sure that everything's on the up and up and all of the bells and whistles that they feel are they're going to argue, do they need a gambling czar to head, you know, in the league that handles this directly, that heads up his own security force, that works to manage things, and then you need to fund that. That's where the integrity fee comes into play, these sorts of things. Oh, and by the way, does anyone think about gambling as an addiction and how it destroys people's lives and people around them? No one really talks about that during all of this hoopla about the gambling and how 5% of all gamblers, and that's a very conservative estimate, end up becoming real problem gamblers. And I would imagine that number probably going to skyrocket, quite honestly, when legalized gambling kicks in.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. My thing is, anytime you have issues like this, legalizing it and bringing it into the light of day is better. And what I mean by that is, right now, if you are gambling on sports, then you may well have a bookie. And what a bookie does is what? He extends you credit. There's very little dollars that are actually at play. If you're dealing with a major corporation, that major corporation is not going to extend you credit. They're not going to say, oh, Clay Travis, I know you're good for 20 grand more, even though you can't show me that you have that 20 grand right now. So I actually think legalized sports gambling makes problem gamblers less able to actually gamble. And if we're really concerned about issues with gambling, that boat's already sold, because we've got state lotteries everywhere. We've got casinos and tribal casinos and everything else. If you have a gambling-related issue in your life, one, don't gamble, right? Would be like, some people just can't handle anything, right? There's some people out there, first time they have a sip of beer, they lose their mind, right? They don't have the ability to control alcohol. They don't have the ability to control gambling. To me, we can't legislate the entire country based on people's inabilities to control themselves, right? That's just my kind of libertarian aspect on this. But I don't think this is going to actually unleash a substantial amount of people who are gambling fiends that wouldn't have already been getting into the business.
Oh, I disagree on that. I really do. I think you're going to end up seeing a lot of folks that say, let me try this. And it's going to be a wide number because it's readily available. I mean, were we talking?
You don't think those guys are already trying it?
Well, no. Well, because in some cases, I'll be honest with you, if you're a young person, for example, okay, and you're talking about being able to gamble something, and I know there's going to be legislation that says you're 18 years old, but who's to say now that it's easy and you have that type of access to be able to bet in game and the addiction?
But that all exists. That all exists now. I mean, you can gamble in game in real time with your phone easier than you're going to be able to do it probably in almost every state where it's illegal now. Like, you can literally pull my phone out right now while I'm talking to you and go on to 25 different offshores and place a bet on anything that I want to. Now,
right,
the
but
difference
the offshores
between
are
that,
tricky, Clay. I mean, that's seriously. I mean, look, I know you have your money stashed in Costa Rica, and you keep going down there with your, quote, family for, quote, vacations. And I get all that, okay? But offshore gaming is scary, dude. I mean, you're talking about giving
I've
credit
never,
cards
By the way,
to people.
I've never taken a dollar from an offshore gaming company.
No, no, absolutely. This segment sponsored by offshore gaming. But my point is that, listen, we talk about that with offshore gaming, and that's very cavalier. But there are folks out there who are hesitant to give their information to offshore gaming. And let's not even begin to talk about the nightmares that come sometimes when trying to collect from these folks. You're opening up the floodgates here for people to be able to legally gamble in a state. I'm just saying the numbers are going to go up. I'm not saying they're going to go up to a point that we're going to have to, you know, that people are going to second guess this. Bottom line is that honestly, when you gamble, most of the time you lose, and there's going to be a lot of people losing money. And it's interesting, as time goes on, as people continue to lose money as they attempt to gamble, will they continue to watch the NFL, or will it turn them off to sports entirely? It's a fair question to ask, I think, under the circumstances.
I think the vast majority of people gamble on sports to make sports more fun for the same reason they drink a beer while they watch sports. I don't think there are very many people out there who are like, oh, I'm going to make a ton of... By the way, can we bring you back on the flip side, because we got to you later?
Yeah, Clay, whatever, because you can't keep format. I know, that's fine, whatever.
Alex Marvez is going to join us here on the flip side. We'll call him back. But I think, this has been my pitch from the get-go, gambling makes sports more fun. And I think the vast majority of people out there who enjoy gambling on sports are doing it in instead of going to a movie and spending $40 to go to a movie and, you know, buy your popcorn and your ice cream or whatever the heck you want to get, your M&Ms, you decide to sit at home on your couch and you're like, oh man, I think the Cavs are going to cover tonight. I'm going to put $40 on the Cavs to cover. And that $40 that you spend on that game, you could end up winning money, but it also, to you, makes it more fun than it otherwise would be. And so I think that's why the vast majority of people gamble. I don't think most people out there are like, oh, I'm going to legitimately get rich from gambling. I think they gamble because it makes sports more fun to have money on the game, particularly when a lot of these games may end up not being that close down the stretch. If you got money, like Danny G was saying, on the over-under of what's going to happen in the Warriors and the Rockets game, you're not going to turn it off with a minute left when the Rockets are up 13 and the outcome of the game is already decided. So I think this is good in general for sports. Now, are there going to be people who have issues and are not able to handle the legalization of sports? Yeah, but I think most of those guys already have issues. Final segment of Hour 2 up next. We'll go back with Alex Marvez.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I believe Todd Furman is waking up early for us. With us out in the desert just a little bit after 5 a.m. I'm sure he's been having a whirlwind of an experience. Todd, you got the result I think you kind of anticipated would happen. What does this mean for sports gambling in general?
I think it's a great question, Clay. And when you try to figure out what the sports gambling landscape is going to look like in these various states that are going to try and rush a product to market, they just need to make sure they do things the right way. The Nevada model, in my opinion, is kind of the gold standard. The traditional -110 on football and basketball games, the 7% tax rate, and the ability for each casino to kind of offer up a product that they feel is consistent with their customer base. It's a far cry from the Pennsylvanias of the world and some of the other states that don't have favorable tax structures with gaming operators that may look to charge 35 to 40%, cut the leagues in for an integrity tax component, or a number of other variables that can really change the offering. But for folks living in New Jersey, Mississippi, states along those lines that have always worked well with gaming operators, I think they have a lot to look forward to.
Okay, let's actually get into the nitty-gritty of how the system is set up in Nevada, because we're getting a lot of questions about what it could look like nationwide. Every state will have to make a decision. You now in the state of Nevada, you can obviously go into a sports book and place a wager. I think a lot of our listeners will have done that or will be familiar with that concept. What can you also do in terms of online? You can now not even have to go into a casino to place a bet, correct?
Well, you have to go into the casino to set up the account. You fill out some paperwork, you turn in your driver's license, you have to put your Social Security number behind it. And then there are a couple different funding methods. Initially, when the mobile app started, you had to do everything over the counter, and then you wouldn't have to go back into the casino unless you were trying to collect. Now, there are some different payment methods where you can fund remotely once you set up your account. It's almost like a prepaid credit card to get yourself going, and you can put money in there, you can withdraw money without ever having to set foot in the casino. Now, I think for me personally, Clay, if a lot of these states come online and they don't have a mobile component, built into their bylaws and the guidelines right off the bat, then they're not going to see the impactful potential revenue from legalization, because most folks aren't going to try and find their local casino or racetrack to walk in there to make all their bets. So I think mobile has to be a major consideration for any state that's looking to legalize.
How progressive do you think states will be?
I think some states are going to be very progressive and proactive, but I think there are going to be some states that are going to take a wait-and-see approach, especially the ones that have professional sports franchises that are all at all afraid of the implications there with the proposed integrity fee or whatever the hell they want to call it. They may try and figure out how they can make a pact or create that relationship so they don't feel like they're pissing off any of the league partners, where essentially Nevada said, hey, we've had sports betting forever. We're not going to change this integrity tax that the Major League Baseball and the NBA are looking for. You're not going to get a piece of our pie.
Yeah, and I want to go back to how this is structured in Nevada. Like you were talking about those apps for mobile gaming. That is restricted based on geo-targeting, right? So if you went to L.A., you wouldn't be able to use one of those apps.
Correct. They're all geo-fenced right now based in the state. But the issue that comes up there, even if you're in the state of Nevada and you're in some of the border towns, Laughlin, where there are casinos along the Colorado River, or up in northern Nevada in state line, if there's a cell tower located in California, you still can't even use the mobile app. So the state of Nevada has been working towards that along with a lot of these app providers over the last, I'd say, year to 18 months to try and reconcile that. Imagine when that scale is magnified and you have people that are living in New York City and Hoboken on either sides of the river, how that's going to work, or states where you have main population centers, maybe a Kansas City, for example, where you have some people living in Missouri and some people living in the state of Kansas, how that's going to work from a sports betting standpoint if one state's on board and the other isn't.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to, if you want to gamble on your phone now, there are a lot of offshores where you can gamble, right? Like, let's not pretend that that doesn't exist. And you can do it anywhere in the country or, frankly, anywhere in the world. Doesn't a progressive American sports gambling industry need to recognize that you have to be able to do this across state borders in order to be efficient and effective?
One would think, and I really believe that's part of why the NFL is pushing for a federal oversight committee to try and make sure that happens. So you're going state to state, and it really doesn't matter. So every product offering isn't changing, because think of it on a ridiculous scale, but I'm sure some of these scenarios will play out. You live in Memphis, Tennessee. You're not able to bet in your state. What are they going to do? They're going to set up a sports lounge or a bar 2 minutes after you cross the border so you don't have to go all the way to Tunica if you want to bet college football legally on a Saturday or the NFL. I think it's borderline ridiculous if some states come online and other states don't for that reason, but I really think that's the kind of scenario and that's the kind of landscape we're going to see, at least initially. In my opinion, we're probably 5 years at minimum away from a federal mandate where every single state is going to offer a similar product.
It's a great point about a city like Memphis, because Memphis is a college football hotbed, let's say. There's no doubt about that. If they're going to have gambling allowed in Mississippi, are you telling me that there's not going to be an immediate economic incentive to have as soon as you cross the border from Tennessee to get into to Mississippi, that it wouldn't make sense to have a depot there to be able to place your sports bets? Now, some people would say, hey, that's what we have with the lottery. There's all sorts of different places right across the state line where when there's $400 million to be won, there's tons of people without a state license plates driving across the border to fill up their gas tanks and buy a shot at a $400 million lottery. So maybe that is going to be in some way the reality. Now, you mentioned this integrity fee. A lot of people out there, to me, the way these leagues are going to make money, whether it's the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, whatever it is off selling rights like exclusive. Hey, you're the exclusive odds provider of the NBA. You're the exclusive odds provider of the Houston Rockets or whichever team it is, not by trying to get a share of every bet that's placed. The share of every bet that's placed argument is absurd to me. Is that the reaction of Vegas as well to this idea?
It definitely is, and you have to give the leagues a little bit of credit for trying to get their piece of the pie. I don't think it's ultimately going to happen. And then by masking it under that integrity fee catch-all, it eliminates the players' associations from getting a piece of the revenue, because they say they're using this integrity fee to ensure the protection of the individual games against tampering, match-fixing, and every other scare tactic that they're looking to employ. I'm with you. I think ultimately you're going to see these various teams partner with casinos or odds providers, what have you, very similar to what we have in the UK model right now from the English Premier League. Anyone who watches soccer on Saturdays or Sundays or throughout the course of the Premier League season sees a lot of these sportsbooks' names right there emblazoned on the front of every jersey. We know there's symbiotic relationships between the casino operators and the league, because the biggest thing in all of this is game protection. And if the operators believe that any of these match outcomes, regardless of the sport, could potentially be compromised, or if the leagues think that their outcomes are compromised, it's not good for anybody. So those two organizations are going to have to work closely with one another, hand in hand, to eradicate the notion that somehow a legalized sports betting market in this country is going to make any of these match outcomes more prone to match fixing.
In reality, legalizing sports gambling actually makes it easier, in theory, to catch abnormal betting patterns and match fixing, right? I mean, that's where most of the caught people have come from, is you guys who are involved in sports gambling can see the abnormal betting patterns and see that something is awry.
100%. And we look at some of the point shaving scandals that have plagued sports over the last 15 to 20 years, maybe even longer than that. Arizona State, probably the single greatest one that college athletics had to deal with. And it was Nevada that became the whistleblower, because you had a steady processional of kids coming up from Tempe to Vegas to try and bet against Arizona State basketball once those stories leaked. Now, on the smaller scale, people will point to Scooter McDougal and what took place at the University of Toledo. They'll talk about Brian Johnson and what went on at San Diego. Those are point-shaving scandals and match-fixing incidents that were going to happen in a legal or illegal market regardless of what went on, because they took place between individuals and bookmakers. The unfortunate reality, and I'm not a Pollyanna, I don't live in a bubble or a silo, those kind of situations are going to manifest themselves regardless of if you have legalization. But the bigger implications and the bigger potential scenarios, as soon as people start to try and move money in a regulated market, that's when the whistles get blown. That's when they communicate with the leagues, with the various conferences, and you do something to put those checks and balances in place.
How many legal states do you think by football season people that are listening to us right now will be able to bet in? They can do it in Nevada. I think Mississippi is a good bet. I think New Jersey is a good bet. How many other states do you think by the time football season starts, which is when gambling season really kicks off, they'll have the ability to do it?
I think West Virginia is very close, and I do have to give people in that fine state a ton of credit, because they also looped in university officials from Marshall and West Virginia into their discussions. Obviously, not having a professional team, you worried about your largest collegiate programs that were there. So they were one of the only states that did that from the college side. I think Connecticut and New York are going to try and find a way to be ready to go by football season as well. And the states that I've heard recently, Iowa, Indiana, and Illinois, that may want to try and get involved. Indiana, I'm not sure, is going to get anywhere close. They're a little bit more conservative. But Illinois and Iowa, I think, are going to be a lot closer to market than people think. States that I know it's not going to be quite what people want to hear. If you're living in Florida, for everybody I've talked to and what I've read, they may take an eternity. And forget about all those great Outkick listeners in Utah. Sports gambling is never going to come to your fine state.
How busy have you been since this ruling came down?
Pretty busy. Folks in media want to try and talk about it. They're looking for the right answers to understand what the implications are. So it's been a whirlwind since about 7 o'clock in the morning yesterday, Pacific. And to kind of put it in perspective, Clay, you know, I get up early. I try and ease into the day. So I'm out walking the dog at a quarter of 7. My phone starts going ballistic right about that time. My mind immediately goes, Jesus, there's got to be a family emergency or one of my friends is in trouble. I look down and see a laundry list of texts, tweets, you name it, once this stuff was repealed by the Supreme Court. And I think it's going to be a busy couple of months to see what a lot of the networks are going to do as far as integrating gambling content into their programming schedules, especially in anticipation of football.
You and I did the first live from a sports book hit in the history of American sports gambling, I think, with FS1 on a national network anyway. With FS1, I believe it was back in 2014 and in 2015. Are you surprised that it has happened this quickly? Because this is something you and I would have discussed, and we're talking to Todd Furman. He's with us, up with us early out in Las Vegas right now. Something you and I would have discussed a ton over the years about the fact that this was coming. Are you surprised that it got here this quickly?
I honestly am. I think the biggest drivers in all of it was the leagues looking to Las Vegas as a viable city to put professional franchises in. So when the Golden Knights were approved as an expansion team to come out here, that was a step in the right direction, because whether the leagues wanted to openly embrace gambling, it was more or less a tacit endorsement of, if this city is good enough for us, we're okay with everything that comes along with it. The Raiders were another major domino to fall, that if you're going to build them a billion-dollar stadium right off the strip, that the gambling discussion has to be front and center. But if you'd have told me, as you said, back in 2014 we did this, inside of 5 years we'd be talking about legalized sports wagering coast to coast and everybody trying to get on board, I probably would have said that was very optimistic. So I'm thrilled that it's here. The biggest question is, as long as the states and leagues don't get greedy and screw it up, I think folks are sitting on an absolute gold mine over the next 3 to 5 years.
You are in Las Vegas. There's been a lot of people say, oh, this is a big blow to Las Vegas. Do you believe that or not?
I think you're going to see a little bit of a residual effect, but at the same time, as soon as you saw land-based casinos pop up around this fine country, you saw Vegas kind of reinvent itself. It didn't go from the gaming mecca all of a sudden to the entertainment capital. It was a gradual process. And we've seen a lot of that stuff now when people come out here. They're not sitting at the tables and gambling for 12 to 14 hours a crack. They're going to the restaurants. They're going to the shows. They're going to the nightclubs, the day clubs, etc. And I prefaced it this way when I talked to some folks on the East Coast. It's the middle of March, and you have an opportunity to meet your buddies in Atlantic City for a four-day bender the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament, or you can come out to Las Vegas where there's actually sunshine, beautiful women, and top-tier restaurants. What are you going to choose to try and do it? And I think Vegas has to realize what it has working for it. In a lot of cases, it's the weather compared to other spots around the country.
Good stuff, as always, Todd Furman. Enjoy the gambling rush, and we appreciate you joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Clay.
It's Todd Furman. You can follow him on Twitter, at Todd Furman. He's awesome. We've been working together for a long time. Big time hit for him for what he does.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Joined now by Petros Papadakis at Petros and Money, 570 a.m. Sports in L.A. Many of you will be finishing your afternoon with him. He starts his morning here. Are you more rested after vacation or more tired after vacation?
I'm going to make a confession to you that I did not make yesterday. I did not. I have like a pill box that's like seven like little slots, you know, for the week for old people, because I take so many different vitamins and stuff. You following me?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I forgot to put my Prozac in there. So like by the end of the week, I started getting angrier and angrier, and I couldn't figure it out. And I didn't know until yesterday morning when I checked my pill box. But anyway, yeah, it was nice.
I find that oftentimes when I come back from vacation, I'm more tired because of the kids. Like before I had kids, you go on vacation, you're like, this is awesome. Like I sleep, like whatever. Nowadays, when you have kids, it's like your schedule doesn't really change that much.
Oh, I didn't bring my kids.
You think that's stupid. How long were you gone without your kids?
Oh, no, only 5 days.
That's a long time. I mean, how like incredible did you sleep without the kids around?
Pretty much around the clock.
Yes.
Yeah, I slept and I watched Gunsmoke and Big Valley on MeTV and all the old Palm Springs stations that play all the old shows for the old people. And I watched old people get drunk and get in fights at bars because they're all coming out of the woodwork. Coachella's over. And what I like to call the White Girl Olympics, Stagecoach is over. Stagecoach is the White Girl Olympics. Do you see what they do for that?
What is the difference between Stagecoach and Coachella?
Well, Coachella is hipsters
music,
and Cam
right?
Newton. Cam Newton, Sam Bradford, hipsters, that's Coachella. And it's, you know, well, Beyonce played Coachella, but it used to be like Morrissey or the Stone Roses and a bunch of DJs and indie bands. So
okay.
That's who goes to Coachella. Stagecoach is just straight up white country people. Your people.
Okay. Yeah, my people.
Yeah.
So they
Brad
just go out.
Paisley.
Is it the same place?
Yeah, it's a gigantic polo fields, it used to be, out in Indio. Coachella is the name of the entire valley. And you'll love this, Clay, because they change all the mascot names all the time. Do you know the name of Coachella Valley High School?
No idea.
Home of the Arabs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but they changed the mascot from
a guy
like,
on a camel.
Well, he looked like a real gnarly, mean Arab guy, and now he looks like Aladdin.
Oh, okay. Well, he's a happy. I'm surprised that the Arabs even exist.
Indio Rajas out there as well. Indio High School, Rajas, Palm Springs High School, Indians.
So it's insanely hot, right?
What?
It's insanely hot at like Coachella and Stagecoach and all these things, right? Or no?
Well, Well, they try to schedule it like at the end of what they would call in the desert the season.
Yes.
Which, you know, usually is about 90, 85 is what they're aiming for, but it can get up to 110, 115 if they're not careful. It was 110 when I was out there, but I don't go outside.
And it's also dusty, right?
At Coachella?
Yes.
No, I think they've kind of tempered that. It's become a real high-class event with a lot of VIP stuff and art exhibits and things of that nature. I think you still have to blow it out in a porta-potty, though.
I went to, for the reason I'm bringing this up, I went to Bonnaroo, and my wife wants to go back to Bonnaroo, which is like the Tennessee Music Festival that I think mm-hmm. would be the Tennessee version of Coachella, and it's in June, and it's like 150 degrees. This thing is in the middle of nowhere. It's just in a dusty, muddy field out in a Tennessee farm, and I really can't think of anything I would less rather do than be trying to sleep there, but at the same time, I don't want to go there and not drink, right? Like, I don't want to go there and just be stone cold sober with all these people running around with their, with like their backpacks for their, they're tripping on all sorts of drugs and they're just sipping on their water all day. Like, I don't want to be the only stone cold sober person at a music festival, but I also don't want to go in and out in the same day. And God forbid, I refuse to ever sleep in a tent. I mean, I've lived for too long to sleep in a tent intentionally. That's
Thank
why
you.
We built walls, right? Like,
Thank
I'm an anti-tent guy.
I will never camp, ever.
Oh, yeah. My wife is like, why don't we take the boys camping? I'm like, why don't we just sleep in the back of our car and also be miserable because at least we can have air conditioning there? I have zero interest in putting a tent up or camping out ever.
Yeah, I feel awful for homeless people, but that is who camps.
Yeah, that's the reason why, like, that's why we're trying to take care of them is so they don't have to be outside.
Yeah, it's called shelter.
Yes, there's no doubt at all about that. So when you look at this, we were talking a lot about sports gambling, and I just had my buddy.
I don't do festivals is all I can add to that because
yeah,
I don't
want
to go to the bathroom outside with a bunch of bears and muskrats.
So what would you have me tell my wife? Like, how do I get out of this?
Say no.
I can't.
Here's what you do. You find out who she wants to see at Bonnaroo, and you take her to a wonderful, intimate show of that artist and a hotel that night.
That's actually a really great solution. And by the way, my wife
should actually. Of course, that's why you asked me.
What do you think about the last two concerts that I've been to see? All right.
Well, you have terrible taste in music.
Foo Fighters and Justin Timberlake.
I guess that's acceptable. I mean, I don't want to upset your audience. It's a national audience of people that like to consume things in mass, but that music is made to be consumed in mass, and it's just not my style. I like the less people involved, meaning record companies and A&R people and stuff of that nature. I like the less people involved between me and the artist, the better for me when it comes to music. And your taste in music has always been awful. And
yeah.
You've always admitted it.
I admit that I don't have very much taste when it comes to music. All right, so what do you think? I was just talking to Todd Furman, and I know you hate Todd Furman because you think he's awful.
I like
represents
Todd.
Everything that's evil.
I love Todd.
About gambling becoming legalized across the country. Will this change the way you talk about sports at all?
Me personally, you know what? It's very interesting because when you and I started working together and Todd Furman was over at Fox and we were doing gambling segments and doing stuff that people weren't doing, you know,
yeah,
ESPN.
No, we were ahead of the curve for sure.
Yeah, ESPN, you guys were doing it. I mean, I was just sitting there appalled. ESPN then... shortly thereafter started it, if I have it correct. I'm sure you talked about it. But I remember when I started calling games in 2001 and nationally in 2004, and that was the third rail. And it still is in the world of the NCAA. I mean, Al Michaels and Mushberger got away with little comments over the years, but we were told not to talk about gambling. We have privileged information, and so on and so forth. And I still live by that code because I'm not a gambler and I'm not super interested in gambling. But that being said, what happened yesterday was a gigantic deal. And kind of like European soccer culture, gambling has become a little looser and more acceptable. And that's why this happened. I mean, it didn't happen in a vacuum. I mean, the stuff that people talked about on TV and the stigma about gambling on sports has certainly changed since the days of Hedick Smith at ASU, you know.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you obviously go back and forth to Vegas every now and then, and I feel like L.A. is pretty close to Vegas. And so I wonder on some level for what we do. I talk about gambling a decent amount, but I think it's going to become more and more commonplace now that this Supreme Court rule has come down.
Well, we had a great lawyer on, not that you're not a great lawyer, Clay, but we had a great lawyer on yesterday, a professor at Pepperdine, a girl named Alicia Jessup. Woman named Alicia Jessup, and she's the most educated person I'd ever heard on the topic, and the possibilities are endless, and it's very interesting. I mean, because what's to stop people from gambling on two raindrops? You know, what's to stop people from opening a place and gambling on two bowling balls going down a ramp? You know, I mean, there is no real cap to it. Here in California, it is much more complicated, and in Connecticut, I think, and Florida, where we have Indian gaming.
Yes.
And it's written in to their deal that they are the only ones that get to game. But at the same time, here in California, we have the Larry Flint Casino down the street from me, right here in Gardena, California. Hustler Casino, I'm pretty sure that's not an Indian tribe. And the Bicycle Casino, that's not a tribe. That's a card brand. That's in Bell Gardens, which is about 20 minutes from where I live. So those are two casinos that you and I could go gamble at all day and lose all our money that are not Indian casinos. So it's very complex. I'm sure the legislation will be out as soon as possible. I don't know who's going to write it, but I heard that New Jersey's going to be able to have stuff up for the NBA Finals by the time that starts, which is like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance of that. We're talking to Petros Papadakis, AM 570 Sports in L.A. Many of you will be listening to him this afternoon. All right, so question for you then. Are you paying a lot of attention? You just mentioned the NBA. Are you paying much attention to the NBA, or are you almost exclusively watching it, thinking about what LeBron James is going to do?
No, because we've been through that so many times, I'm kind of fatigued. I don't know if there's such a thing as LeBron story fatigue, but if there is, I have it. I also have James Harden and the Warriors story fatigue, although I do think it was pretty funny yesterday looking at James Harden in his hoodie and like his beard coming out, playing with his beard, watching the game with that dead stare. It's just so weird, dude. But I'm amazed at the overreaction in the sports world game to game when it comes to the NBA. And it's not just a reaction to what's going to happen in the next game or who's going to win the series. It's a reaction to, well, this is going to piss LeBron off and he's going to go to L.A. Or, well, this means LeBron's going to Houston. And, well, of course, this means LeBron's going to stay in Cleveland. And then somebody writes some long form, super educated sounding article about the whole topic, and then the narrative completely changes like 2 days later. So I feel like it's kind of a futile effort. And when you have basketball experts that I trust saying, hey, the Golden State Warriors can't be stopped, they're going to win the next five titles and nothing else matters, then it makes it really futile and it feels really stupid. I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think the Warriors are going to win the 2018 title, and I don't think there's going to be any drama involved in it at all, barring injury.
Yeah, and I saw somebody send a tweet last night, I think it was Pat 40, saying, you know, what excellent basketball the Warriors play. And then I saw somebody else send a tweet, I think it was Dave Damashek, about, you know, don't hate on KD because you're vapid if you hate on his decision to join the Warriors. And I don't know. I mean, to me, when the second best basketball player in the world joins the already best basketball team in the world, it takes some of the intrigue out of it. Not to say they're not excellent and a marvel to watch for basketball purists, but when there's no competition, it's not really that much fun.
I agree with you, my man. We will talk to you next week. Welcome back from vacation. Thanks for waking up early with us. By the way, who's the yoga instructor this week?
You'll love this. DeAndre's done. He moved to Temecula, and where Daniel Jeremiah lives. And now we have Jenna, who does not know me from anything. She does not know the glories of AM Sports Talk Radio.
Yes.
And she calls me Petros. Awesome.
All right. Have a good morning, Petros.
Thank you. Thank you, Clay, Travis, and to hell with Bonnaroo.
Hell of Bonnaroo indeed. That is Petros Papadakis, AM 570 Sports in LA at Petros and Money.